The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
There's a reason that we live so far from Hollywood, in the country looking hard to find a home, but nothing perfect.
Plague 2020. So glad you are with me this morning. I'm inside the Beltway, where it'll be another steamy day. Inside the Beltway, the big story of the day is it's a continual fight to stop a chop. To stop a chop. The anarchists and others continually try and build their version of Seattle's, quote, autonomous zone, close quote, in the Lafayette Park region of the city across from the White House, and the police continually take it down. As of 2:41 a.m. last night, it had been cleared out again. Understand, that's not going to happen in D.C. That's not going to happen across from the White House under either a Republican or a Democratic president. We're not going to allow the security threat to the presidency of the United States to occur of a massive buildings and lawless zone. It's just not going to happen. But there was no violence last night. The ragtag bag of chopsters get chopped down by the police and ushered away, and then they come back because, after all, why go to work? President Trump went to Arizona yesterday. The rundown will play for you. Some of his comments both at the border and at the Charlie Kirk event later in the evening. The key thing in D.C. today is it appears that Senate Democrats are going to block a police reform bill in the Senate, because it's authored by Tim Scott, and they'd rather have no police reform than a bill authored by an African-American Republican. There are not much differences between the bill. The Senate GOP plan incorporates a number of Democratic proposals, such as legislation to make lynching a federal hate crime. That's not really a Democratic proposal. It's been pushed by Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, who is a Republican, of course, African-American, Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Booker. It pushes a National Police Commission, which is indeed the brainchild of Gary Peters, a Democrat from New York. But there are some differences on the degree to which a federal mandate would alter practices at police departments across the country. And there is a fundamental difference in banning no-knock warrants. However, the House is going to ban all no-knock warrants. So if the Senate moves its bill forward, they'll go to a conference and figure something out. I don't believe this is going to get out of the Senate for the simple reason Senate Democrats do not want Tim Scott, African-American senator from South Carolina and a Republican, to get the win. They are putting politics ahead of police reform. So just when you hear the Democrats next talk about police reform, understand they're lying. They don't care about it. They really don't care about it. If they did care about it, you would get 60 votes like that in the United States Senate for Tim Scott's bill. And the Republicans are in control of the chamber. They do not have to accept the wild left-wing point of view that is put forward by Kamala Harris. It is up to them to decide, and Democrats can block it, and they are going to block it. Great article in the Wall Street Journal today on homicide in Seattle's no-cop zone. I've tweeted it out. You should be following me on Twitter. By the way, the show is broadcast live on YouTube. Just go to YouTube. Type in my name and you'll see it. The Justice Department and state attorney generals are conferring on getting Google into court on antitrust charges. Good. It's about time. Now to the virus. We have 9.1 million cases across the country, across the globe. 9.1 million cases. Seoul, Korea is the latest place for a second wave. But according to the Wall Street Journal, the global economy shows signs of pulling out of its slump. That leads me to the morning markets report brought to you, of course, by Birch Gold. To get your gold, you go to HughGold.com, HughGold.com, and you should diversify. I feel bad every morning I tell you about this. If you had texted my name, Hugh, to 474747 yesterday, you'd be happy today because gold went up almost 0.75% overnight. It's at $1,795. It's now up about $400. Since I first told you, you really ought to diversify into gold during this period of uncertainty, and I continue to tell you that. Birch Gold will help you diversify, but you've got to go to HughGold.com first or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Overnight, the Japan index went down 0.07%, and the Hong Kong index went down 0.5%. Markets in England and Germany late into the day are down 2.5% and 2.25%, respectively. Crude oil's down a little bit below 40 at 39.84, still way off of the lows of $17 and $16. The 10-year Treasury remains at 0.71%. I have no idea what stocks are going to do today. Yesterday, I had no idea, but in fact, Amazon went up $50 a share yesterday. And it's the only stock I own. I keep looking at it in amazement. $50.59 to $2,764 a share. Some analysts say it's a $4,000 stock. I don't know. I don't do stock picking. But I do read here, Brazil e-commerce jumps 57% in the first 5 months of 2020. Why is that? Because South America is now experiencing what North America experienced 3 months ago, which is the peak of the flu. They're in their flu season. And it's really crushing Brazil, so people are staying inside. The number of online orders grows 65% in three categories, cosmetics and perfumes, furniture and electronics. Isn't that amazing? 65% in one quarter. From the Wall Street Journal, global economy shows signs of pulling out of its slump. That is primarily because it's a North American economy. But also in the New York Times, virus gains steam across Latin America, in Mexico especially. The pandemic has now infected more than 460,000 people, and they don't have great testing in Mexico. And so testing, more tests means more positives and more negatives, and we know we have a better handle on the disease in the United States than anywhere in the world because we have by far the most tests. But all across the globe, the virus is everywhere. It's taking its mortality at between 2 and 5% everywhere. And it's going to continue to do so. But the global economy is adjusting and rebounding. The Telegraph today has Boris Johnson, bold, punchy, optimistic. The old Boris Johnson is back at last. He has totally recovered from the pandemic. That is good news. Here is Donald Trump in Yuma yesterday talking about the fence. He's standing in front of the fence. And this is what he had to say. Cut number 7.
And I'm thrilled to be in Yuma, Arizona. They've treated me very nicely in Arizona, so we're very happy about that, Mr. Governor, right? To commemorate the completion of more than 200 miles of powerful border wall, we're on pace to complete 450 miles by the end of the year and 500 miles almost immediately thereafter. We may even have the 500 miles by the end of the year. We're doing a real job. The Army Corps of Engineers, I want to thank them. They've been incredible. This is the most powerful and comprehensive border wall structure anywhere in the world. It's got technology that nobody would even believe between sensors and cameras and everything else. With us today are Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Chad Wolf, who has done a fantastic job. Thank you, Chad.
And it was an impressive display down there. Doug Ducey is a great governor of Arizona. I believe Trump's going to carry Arizona. I think Martha McSally is going to be the next senator. She's doing better and better every single day. But the president also had a message for those impacted by DACA. Cut number 11.
Well, we're looking at it. We'll work it out with DACA. I think good things are happening with DACA. and they resubmit, but we'll work it out. And the Democrats have been playing with DACA for years, and they haven't done anything. I'll get it done. I'll get it done. And we'll, good things will happen for DACA recipients, and pretty soon.
Is there a message?
Good things are going to happen for DACA recipients. One more cut. He did get in a jab at Biden. Cut number 9.
So I just want to thank everyone, the Biden people, and he's controlled totally by the radical left, as you understand. He's not controlling it. They're controlling him. They want open borders. They want criminal sanctuaries. They want everything that doesn't work. I don't even think it works politically, frankly, at this point. People see what happened. You'll take a look at what's happening in Seattle, or take a look. Minnesota, such a great, great state, but you look at Minneapolis and you see what happened there until we sent in the National Guard. We said, you got to do it. As soon as they were there, boom, shut down. All the problems they had shut down. You didn't hear about them.
What the president is going to run on is not against Joe Biden because he's hapless figurehead, but against the radical left behind him. The radical left, by the way, has beaten Elliott Engel in New York. They're slow to declare it, but a longtime Democratic dinosaur tossed out by another member of the AOC squad as the Democratic Party continues to lurch left. More coming up on this Wednesday edition of The Hugh Hewitt Show. Stay tuned.
Don't let me be the last to know my hand.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Spotify sent the fetching Mrs. Hewitt 50 years of songs of the summer yesterday. So I provided it to Adam Youngman to become our bump music for a couple of weeks. Summer songs only. President decided to begin summer in Arizona. Always an unusual choice to go to Arizona in June. Doug Ducey, I love you. In fact, I'm going to have on a young Arizonan who's running for office at the end of the show today. Alex Kaladin is running for Arizona State Senate. And I love Arizona, but I mean, going there in June, and I guess it's better than going in July. But the president went and talked to the Turning Point action speech at the Dream City Church in Arizona. Here's what he had to say, cut number 19.
You're fighting against an oppressive left-wing ideology that is driven by hate and seeks to purge all dissent. And you understand that, amazing at that age. Your young people generally, a couple of oldsters out there, friends of mine. The radical left demands absolute conformity from every professor, researcher, reporter, journalist, corporation, entertainer, politician, campus speaker, and private citizen. But we have Charlie, and we have our people, and our people are stronger. Our people are stronger. And our people are smarter, and we are the elite. We are the elite. You know, do you ever notice? They said it 2 weeks ago. I was talking to somebody. He says, well, you know, the elite. I said, what are you talking about, the elite? Who's the elite? They're the elite? They're not the elite. You're the elite. You are. You're smarter. You're better looking. Have a better future. You know your way around better, believe it or not. There's only one thing they have. They're more vicious. They are vicious. They are vicious people. Anyone who dissents from their orthodoxy must be punished, canceled, or banished. That includes from television. You see it. But you will not be silenced. And, you know, the bottom line, I get interviewed by people, and I'm sitting the other day in the Oval Office, and I didn't like the tone, and I said, you know, it's really nice because I'm here and you're not. I look at
President is having fun with Charlie Kirk's group Turning Point. He did, however, take time to embrace the vision of Martin Luther King, cut number 20.
While their movement is based on hate, ours is based on love, love of our family, love of our nation, and love of our fellow citizens. We embrace
the noble vision of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and believe that people should not be judged based on the color of their skin, but the content of their character.
You know, it's a great thing when the president repeats the most famous line by Dr. King. It is unfortunate that the left in America no longer believes that. But the radical left in America is the radical left in America. The president spoke about the radical left in Seattle. Cut number 21.
This is a choice of two futures. The left's vision of disunity and discord, or our vision of equal opportunity and equal justice. Every American should take a long look at the bedlam in Seattle, because that's exactly what will come to every city near you, every suburb and community in America, if the radical left Democrats are put in charge.
He is right. He is right. Seattle is a crystal ball. Seattle is your future. Chop. The chop shop that they attempted to put up last night in D.C. got taken down because the federal government controls D.C., and that ain't happening. Long ago and far away, I drafted the rules and regulations for Lafayette Park. You're allowed to demonstrate in Lafayette Park. You're not allowed to camp in Lafayette Park. And there will be no chop shop established in Lafayette Park. The one in Seattle's already had a murder, two other shootings. It's already chaotic. It's already falling apart. But there isn't even going to be the first week of a chop shot in D.C. Not happening inside the Beltway. Don't go anywhere, America. Coming right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
In the year 35, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today.
Welcome back, America. 33 minutes after the hour. Spotify summer songs from over the decades proves that it doesn't take much to break into the hot song of the summer category. Good morning to you. I hope you are enjoying your drive to work. Insurgent Jamal Bowman holds a lead over veteran Representative Elliot Engel in the most watched race. The Kentucky Senate race also matters, but they won't know the result in Kentucky for a week. So they voted yesterday on the 23rd. They're not going to know until the 30th because they allowed mail-in votes for the first time in the Bluegrass State. And so we won't know. This is going to be, by the way, it's a foreshadowing of November. We won't know who won where for a week. Don't plan on a vacation after the election is done because the election won't be done. But we do know that in the 16th Congressional District, which encompasses part of the Bronx and Westchester, one of the old dinosaurs of the Democratic Party, Elliot Engel. I mean, he's just been around doing nothing for decades, but he's part of Team Pelosi. He's getting pushed aside by Team AOC, by a young and fiery middle school principal who is just going to get crushed, who's just going to crush him. His name is Jamal Bowman. And Jamal Bowman is like the rest of the squad, hard left. And the hard left has taken over the Democratic Party. It is that simple. President sat down with my friend Brian Kilmeade at the White House yesterday talking, about a number of things. First of all, he talked about if Biden were to win and become the president, cut number one.
I don't like it at all. I don't like anything that's going on. Now, federal, I've stopped. I've stopped federal. But the states are, a lot of states are weak. A lot of people are weak. And they're allowing it to happen. Hey, it's going over a little bit around the world now. They want to remove the statue of Gandhi, okay? All he wanted was peace. They want to take down Ulysses S. Grant. Well, he's the one that stopped the Confederates, right? So, you know, he was a great general. He turned, nobody's stock went higher than his stock over the last 10 or 15 years.
But do you understand how you look at Thomas Jefferson, you look at George Washington, you look at James Monroe, you look at James Madison? One thing they had, they were brilliant, they also had slaves.
Yeah.
So how do we grow as a country, but yet not forget our past?
So you have to understand history, and you have to understand the culture and so many other aspects of our country. And people can study that, and they can hate it, and let's all hate it. But you can't take down George Washington's statue, and half of our country is named after Washington, You can't. We have to remember the heritage, the culture of our country. And, you know, this is less important, but it's very important. Some of the things that they're trying to destroy are magnificent pieces of art. Have you ever seen an area where a statue was removed and you look at the area and they put blacktop over the top of it? They put asphalt over the top and that's the end. And it was the center of a town or, a village. And now the statue's gone and the whole village is like a different place. And here's the other problem I have. A lot of these people that want it down don't even know what they're taking down. I watch them on television, and I see what's happening, and they're ripping down things. They have no idea what they're ripping down. But they started off with the Confederate, and then they go to Ulysses S. Grant. Well, what's that all about? And they would knock down Lincoln. There's a group that wants to take down Lincoln. They haven't figured out exactly why yet. George Washington, Thomas
Jefferson. Stop. He's right. There is no rule of reason here. They don't. They're going after U.S. Grant is just crazy. They also took down Juniper Serra, St. Serra, in a great move that the radical left hates the Roman Catholic Church. Just understand that. The radical left will be. So say goodbye to the free exercise clause. We get a big decision, I think, tomorrow on the free exercise clause. I'll keep you posted on that. Cut number two, Brian Kilmeade asked the president about why he only had 6,000 people in Tulsa. Cut number two.
When I went there, it was the first time. Now, I heard 2 weeks of nothing but you are going to die if you go. You are going to die. You'll never live again. You'll never breathe again if you walk into that very beautiful arena. They treated us very nicely, except for one problem. They called a curfew. So people that were in line had to leave. You had people sitting waiting for 4 or 5 days in advance, and they called a curfew and they had to leave. I don't know where they went, but they had to leave. You know that. And then I called up and I said, it shouldn't be curfew. I called the mayor and I said, Mayor, you can't do a curfew. It's not fair to our people. They called a curfew because you had some very bad people coming. They did come, and the police did a good job, but they called curfew, number one. Number two, you had nothing but horrible press for a week and a half, 2 weeks leading up to it, that you were going to be in bad shape if you walked into the arena, and various other things. Now, despite that, we actually had a good crowd. For anybody else, it would be a good crowd, but I agree with you. It's the only time that I've had a vacant seat since I came down the escalator with the First Lady, but
it is the only time, and it's because of COVID. I mean, people ought to realize some people are not going to go out because they are more risk averse or they got asthma or something. They're just not going to do it. But he did point out to Brian Kilmeade the television audience that he achieved for Fox. Cut number three.
Fox put it out. Yeah, I mean, Fox put it out. So it's the biggest, the largest Saturday night audience in its history. Nobody's going to say that. I'll say it. I'm saying it now. If I didn't say it, they'll put it out. Nobody's going to pick it up because the fake news won't do that. But think of what that means. Now, a lot of people saw it. A lot of people went to Tulsa, and it was rough because they had, you know, so-called protesters, anarchists, and various other people. And they said, let's go home and watch it on television. But this is much more important. We had a very nice crowd of warriors. They were warriors. But it's the first empty seat, but these are the best ratings we've ever had.
Interesting.
I think that means something, because that, to me, is like a poll.
Right.
And online, even better.
Online, even better. Donald Trump then talks about Ambassador John Bolton, his former national security advisor. Cut number four.
Look, this is a guy with no personality. All he wanted to do is drop bombs on everybody. He got us. He was one of the many people that got us into the war in the Middle East, which was a big mistake. I said to him, let me ask you, do you think recently, I said, what did you think? He said, I think we made the right decision. I said, you lost me there. It was the worst decision in the history of our country. I know you may disagree with that. Worst. Well, now you might agree. At the time, you would have, you know, felt differently. But also, the Libyan model, you know what that means, right? Look it up. One of the dumbest things ever said, I think it was said on Deface the Nation. The Libyan model, he said the Libyan model, that was set us back. You have no idea. John Bolton was a stupid guy, and he was a guy with no heart. And he also had a statement that he would lie whenever he had to. He has that statement. It's a well-known statement. And I fired him. And I didn't think it was a big deal. And I wasn't around him very much. But what he did do is he took classified information and he published it during a presidency. It's not, you know, it's one thing to write a book after, during. And I believe that he's a criminal. And I believe, frankly, he should go to jail for that.
You know, I put out yesterday, you really can't prosecute John Bolton because the consequences of pulling in all of the witnesses that he could pull in would be so extraordinary. Could do a grand jury if you wanted to. You could do a grand jury. We'll wait and see. The president also went out on the White House lawn and he talked about vandals who tear down statues, cut down number five.
Last night we stopped an attack on a great monument, the monument of Andrew Jackson in Lafayette Park. And I just want to thank law enforcement. They did a great job. We were working very closely with the White House Secret Service and some of our executives. It was really, they did a great job. They stopped the call. Numerous people are in jail and going to jail today. People are already there, but we're looking at long-term sentences under the Act. We have a very specific Monuments Act, and we are looking at long-term jail sentences for these vandals and these hoodlums and these anarchists and agitators, and call them whatever you want. Some people don't like that language, but that's what they are.
You know, I never knew that there was a statute prohibiting the defacement of federal statues honoring veterans. I never knew. I'm 64 years old. I've been practicing law since 1983. I've been in the Department of Justice, the White House Counsel's Office, General Counsel of two federal agencies. I've been in state and local government for an additional 22 years after that in a variety of appointed positions. I've been broadcasting since 1990. I never knew there was a statute for which there are criminal penalties if you deface the statue honoring a U.S. military veteran. Never knew that. That was discovered by Senator Tom Cotton and his team. And my hat is off to them because it's up to the federal government now, not the state governments, to decide we're going to come and indict you and arrest you for defacing a federal statute honoring a military veteran. Andrew Jackson was a great president. He was also a slave owner. So you understand him in the round. And he was also a violent man. He was in a number of duels, but he shook up. That's why Jackson is in the Oval. The president's always put up the people they admire the most in the Oval, and I think Donald Trump takes a lot of inspiration from Jackson's bellicosity, his pugnaciousness, not from the fact that he was a slave owner. Of course not. That's like no one approves of that. But Jackson will be defended in Lafayette Park, and those people are going to go to jail. The president also repeated a truism, which I guess the major media just doesn't understand this. Cut number six.
I don't kid. Let me just tell you. Let me make it clear. We have got the greatest testing program anywhere in the world. We test better than anybody in the world. Our tests are the best in the world, and we have the most of them. By having more tests, we find more cases.
What do people not understand about this? And I'm glad now that you can get a test in a doctor's office. If you want a test, you can go get a test. 2 months ago, that wasn't true. People were worried. They had the sniffles. You know, my allergies are deadly. They're just complete coming back. But I've always known they're allergies. They're not COVID. But a lot of people get worried and they want to get tested. And they couldn't get tested 2 months ago. Now, if you can't get tested, you're a moron. They're everywhere. And so you can go find out if you got COVID. And yes, you're going to find more cases of COVID. What matters, listen to me, what matters is ICU admissions, and what really matters are deaths. And in the United States, the deaths have gone down and down and down because the treatments have gotten better and better and better. Doesn't mean that there aren't people with fragile underlying medical conditions like heart disease and obesity and other diabetes, other comorbidities that may kill them if they get the virus. But if you're going to get it, there's no better place to get it than the United States of America. Is Tim Scott's bill going to pass? I asked David Drucker, the Washington Examiner, next. Stay tuned. Good morning, America. Hugh Hewitt on Wednesday, the 24th of June, 2020. The Songs of Summer, according to Spotify. I think this was one of David Drucker's favorite. I think he was a big Carpenters fan. Am I right about that, David Drucker?
You know, funny you should say that, because my first memories as a kid, about 3 years old, are my parents playing a Carpenters LP, a record, in our living room, and me singing the words as best, you know, three-year-old can. So I have most of that album, including this song, then.
Well, there you go. I knew you were a Carpenters fan. Drucker, you cover Congress. David M. Drucker on Twitter. For the Washington Examiner, I want to know if Tim Scott's bill is going to pass or not. What do you hear?
Well, look, right now Democrats are planning to hold it up as far as we can tell. Now, look, I'm spending most of my time on the campaign, but I've been watching this closely because obviously this issue is now such a big part of the 2020 debate, and Democrats, you know, are indicating they're going to filibuster. And so if they're going to filibuster, there's not going to be a bill. Now, it could be a negotiating tactic. Maybe they want to try and squeeze more out of the bill. But look, I've been watching this sort of thing over the past, you know, 10 or 15 years that I've been here. The minority in the Senate has the power of the filibuster to try and either block things they don't want, prevent victories by the majority, or squeeze out concessions. So I think the issue here is, you know, why the Democrats in the Senate are blocking it. And I don't think we totally know yet. It sort of depends, I think, also on any political pressure they may feel, because when you're in the minority and you can scream all you want about this is unfair, they didn't include us in the negotiations, but a lot of times voters will just ask, why are you blocking, you know, at least some attempt to move the ball forward? And it can be hard to make the case. Not always. I mean, when Republicans tried and failed to filibuster Obamacare, the politics of that worked out for them in the end, in the 2010 elections and the 2014 elections. But sometimes these things don't work. So it's a matter of politics, so we'll have to see.
Now, I have been reading the Washington Post account, and it's written by Sungmin Kim, who's a very, very good reporter, as you know. She said there's a lot of agreement between the Senate Democrats and Republicans. They have long agreed to make lynching a federal hate crime. Now, you know, that's more symbolic than it is real. Lynching gets prosecuted when it happens. But they do want to set up a National Policing Commission, which was a move by Democrat Gary Peters of Michigan, who may be the second most vulnerable Democrat in America, and James running a campaign up in Michigan that's pretty strong. But there are some disagreements on whether or not there will be a mandate to change policing practices like chokeholds. These are not major deals. The Senate could pass the bill, the House is going to pass a bill, and the traditional thing is you go to conference and you iron out. But I personally believe Democrats don't want Tim Scott to have a win because Tim Scott threatens them. I also think they're worried that President Trump's going to switch out Mike Pence and put Tim Scott on the ticket. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think they're worried about it. Does Tim Scott present them with a unique political challenge, David Drucker?
I really don't think this is a Tim Scott issue. I mean, Tim Scott is, you know, a real workhorse in the Senate. He's not, you know, he doesn't run around the country giving high-profile speeches all the time, but he gets involved in a lot of policy issues, and he's been involved here. I think it's more an issue, potentially, of not wanting to produce legislation, possibly, that President Trump can sign and therefore claim as a political victory. Now, you know, if you talk to Democrats, they're going to outline all the ways in which the Tim Scott legislation falls short. And, you know, there are Senate Democrats that would like more out of it. But in the House, you're going to have a lot more disagreement. And so notwithstanding, you know, your comment about conference committee, which is right, you know, that the way it's supposed to work is the two chambers then go to conference, negotiate compromise to the two bills that might be wildly different, and then you go on from there. I think in an election year when partisanship is hot, and given the COVID crisis and now the George Floyd unrest, things are really hot. I just think it's hard for Democrats and Republicans to come together and give each side some sort of win. And I think everybody starts to put everything on hold and say, I think I can win in November. I think Democrats are looking at that in particular. They're looking at all the polls and they're saying, look, we have a chance to possibly win the Senate, win the White House. Why are we going to give a concession now, give Trump anything to hold on to when we could basically run the road after November and do everything we want.
Last question. Is Seattle helping or hurting Democrats?
I don't think it's hurting Democrats because it's isolated. I think if this was the sort of thing where it was popping up, and I've been talking about this, if this had popped up in a dozen or two dozen cities all over the country and there was just rampant lawlessness, I think that might be an issue. But here you have the issue of one city with a weak mayor where things are out of control, and it hasn't presented Democrats with having to confront, some sort of widespread issue. So I don't think this is a problem for them.
I don't know if the silent majority is big enough to win the election, David, but the silent majority is definitely watching Seattle. It just is. And we'll see whether or not chops spring up across the United States. They're not happening in D.C. David M. Drucker on Twitter. Thank you, America. Follow me to hour number two of this morning's Hugh Hewitt Show.